It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 139. I am your host, Adam Mangum. First up, Matt and I preview the WCC Men's Basketball Tournament. We pick the winners, and we also pick which players on BYU we think will make the most impact this postseason. We also talk about the Oscars. We even make a shout-out to the women's basketball team, which is seeded number 2 in the tournament as well. I am then joined by NFL draft guru Tom Melton to discuss the NFL draft prospects of the BYU players, including Kyle Van Noy, Cody Hoffman, and Ethan Manomaliuna. Once again, this is the Rise and Shout podcast. Catch us at LoyalCougars.com, download us on iTunes, and listen to us right now. Matt, it's a glorious time of year.
It is indeed, my friend.
Glorious time of year. You know what the temperature was when I got up this morning?
I don't want to talk about the weather.
-8.
Oh.
You don't want to talk about the weather? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Texas. Did it dip below 50?
It got into the 30s today.
Oh my gosh, it's so cold.
Adam, I had to wear a coat to work.
Oh my gosh, I want to punch you in the face.
It was more like a jacket, but I had to wear it over my normal clothes. I did take the liner out.
Yeah. You know what I want to do with that jacket liner? Wrap it around your big head.
It sounds like you probably needed to wrap around your head, -8 degrees.
Yeah, I actually like winter. I like snow. Don't necessarily mind the cold.
But okay, good things for given where you live.
50 days below zero this winter. 50.
Ooh.
Most people don't have that many days below zero in their life. So, but that's what we're here to talk about, Matt. We're here to talk about the Oscars. This is our Oscar podcast.
Yes.
Because both of us watched all of the Oscars, beginning to end. Am I correct in assuming that of you?
You are making an assumption.
Yes.
For sure.
How was that assumption?
I did not watch a minute.
I did not watch a minute either.
I got a lot of tweets about it, though.
I saw a lot of tweets. But I have two problems with the Oscars, Matt. Well, maybe more than two problems. But we'll start with two. The first problem is it's too long. It's too long. And the second thing is, starting 7, almost 8 years ago, when my first kid was born, I don't see most of these movies, so I don't actually care.
Yeah, see, I don't get to see them until they're, like, out on video or...
Right, right.
Which doesn't even really happen anymore, right?
Yeah,
until they're
then.
Available for home viewing or however, you know, whatever the kids are saying these days.
What are the kids saying these days, Matt? What are the kids saying? I don't know. So to your point, Matt, we haven't seen any of these movies. So we are going to, as usual, talk about something we're absolutely not qualified to talk about.
That's what this podcast is all about.
That really could sums up this podcast, really. Doesn't it?
It does.
So let's talk about that for a second. So Matt, have you seen any of the best picture nominees? Spoiler alert here, we may just talk about who won some awards.
So if you have that on the DVR and you're going to watch it later, you might want to fast forward for a minute.
Yes, or press pause and come back to us later. Press pause.
I had not seen...
Press pause! Okay, go ahead.
I've not seen any of the movies that were nominated for Best Picture.
I have seen one of them. Gravity. Which was quite good. It was quite good. I've heard people that didn't like it, and I think those people are strange, quite honest.
Wow.
I'm kidding. You cannot like it. I don't care. But I am a fan of Alfonso Cuarón. And Sandra Bullock's good, and George Clooney's good. And I can't believe they took them out in space and filmed all that. I mean, that must have cost billions. I don't know how.
Talking about making a sacrifice for your craft.
Yeah. Man, she put herself on the line there. That was. Yeah. It's actually.
Did they ever find George Clooney? Did they find him?
No, they haven't found him yet. They haven't found him. It's kind of sad.
It's method acting.
He had a good rest of his career, I think, ahead of him. Really nice guy. Wasn't he the carpenter handyman on some TV show once?
Yeah, he was. What show was it? It's like Who's the Boss or something.
No, not Who's the Boss. It's the one where the Facts of Life. Who's the Boss?
Oh yeah.
You're like a whole decade too late.
I was a little late on that.
The guy's like 70 years old. So of those movies, now 12 Years a Slave 1, I already told you guys to pause it. So if you're upset with me, that's your problem. 12 Years a Slave 1, I would like to see that movie.
Highly critically acclaimed.
Okay, so
I just have to wait till I can see it in somewhere other than a theater.
Percent chance you will see any of these movies. Let's start with the winner, 12 Years a Slave. Let me put it this way. Higher or lower than 50%?
Oh, higher than 50%.
Okay. Higher than 50% for me as well. The Wolf of Wall Street, higher or lower than 50%? For me,
probably
it's
lower.
Yeah. I'd have no... It's like Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio, you just said enough for me. I'm not interested, quite frankly. Too much self-indulgent filmmaking for me. Philomena? I don't know if that's... I'm saying that right. I didn't know that movie existed before yesterday. So I'm going to say less than 50.
I know nothing about it.
Okay. Nebraska. I've been through Nebraska. I do not want to spend 2 more hours there.
Yeah, I don't really understand what it's about, so I'm good.
All right. Her with Joaquin Phoenix falling in love with Siri, I believe.
Looks very interesting, but probably less than 50%.
Over 50% for me. Big fan of Joaquin Phoenix. And the story is appealing to me. Gravity.
Joaquin Phoenix, but you know who's really good is his brother, Running Phoenix.
Very funny. Very funny.
I'm pretty sure that joke's never been told.
And nor should it ever be told again. Gravity, I've already seen it, so that's 100% for me.
Probably right around 50. I'd like to see it.
Oh, you should see it. You should see it.
It's highly critically acclaimed.
It was nominated for the Best Picture, dang it. Will you see best actor winner Matthew McConaughey, which I never thought I'd say in a sentence, with Dallas Buyers Club?
Likely no.
No, me either. Also been to Dallas. Captain Phillips.
I definitely want to see this movie.
Really wanted to see it in the theater, never got around to it. Tom Hanks could read the phone book for 2 hours, I'd show up for it. I'm not kidding. Actually, I think that movie is called Castaway.
Yeah. That one's been done.
Yes, that one's been done. American Hustle.
I would like to see American Hustle.
I would also like to see American Hustle. I don't know if it's over 50% just because I don't know when I'll see it. And by the way, when we say we want to see these movies, we want to see edited versions of the R-rated ones.
Oh, right.
I want to see it on TNT.
Of course.
You know, encouraging the watching of R-rated movies.
That would be an honor code violation.
Yes, it would
I just assumed that was a given, right?
Yes. Well, I just wanted to clear that up. I don't want, we don't want our BYU podcasting license to be revoked.
You never know these days.
Yes. You never do know. Now, Matt, Christian Bale was up for Best Actor. Bruce Dern, Leonardo DiCaprio, Chiwetel, I don't know how you say his last name, but he's also in one of my favorite movies of all time, Serenity, which is, anyway, it's a great movie. I'm a geek. Matthew McConaughey wins, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
If you had told someone 10 years ago that Matthew McConaughey was going to win the Best Actor, what do you think they would have done to you?
You mean if I would have shown them a clip from Angels in the Outfield and said, that guy is going to win a Best Actor?
Whoa. He's in Angels in the Outfield?
Yes, sir.
No.
He plays a boneheaded baseball player in Angels in the Outfield.
No.
Get on your Google machine, my friend.
I'm going on to the Internet Movie Database right now to confirm the insanity you just said. And there it is. You know, truth be told, I actually like Matthew McConaughey. I know a lot of people don't.
All right.
One of my favorite movies, underrated movies of all time, is what's the dragon one with him and Christian Bale? He's in Amistad too. He's really good in Amistad. Maybe people would know that he would be good. And The Wedding Planner, A Reign of Fire. That's what it's called.
Well, 10 years ago, when was Amistad?
Amistad was 97.
So 10 years ago, that you know, but you go back to Angels in the Outfield.
But 10 years ago, he had just starred in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days and Sahara. Ew. So you know what I mean, like. And then he would go on to make like Failure to Launch. He was making like romantic comedies.
Failure to Launch was just basically the same movie.
Yeah, I think they filmed them all at the same time and just released them a few years away from each other. What I have to say though is I actually like the guy, so I have no, and I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know. I've heard he did a great job in the movie, but I don't really know. So now we've talked for 10 minutes about something we don't know.
That's pretty awesome. I will throw out there, Christian Bale, the costume in American Hustle, the makeup job there, phenomenal.
Well, you know, he got fat. He put on weight. He, like, ate poorly and drank lots of soda, sugared soda.
I could have put that diet together for him.
I live that diet. He actually called me.
Actually, I could totally look like that with very little effort.
I look like that right now. So anyway, congratulations to the winners and the losers.
Yes, I've never even been nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah, so. I have not either. And, yes, congratulations. I'm waiting for the request for me to host the Oscars. It has not come yet.
It'll come. Keep waiting. You just wait by the mailbox.
You know what's sad, Matt, is I one day wanted to take over for David Letterman. That is, and still remains to be, one of my dreams. I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think it's in the cards.
Jimmy Fallon just took over for
Jay Leno.
For Jay Leno. And Jimmy Fallon, he's okay, but I could have been somebody. I could have been a contender.
I feel like Jimmy Fallon used to be funnier.
You know, I've never been a huge fan. I don't like dislike the guy, but he's an upgrade over Leno. I got sick of Leno's act, I think, on his third episode hosting. And I hate to say that. He's from Boston. So, you know, crunch all you want.
He's from Boston, but his chin's from Rhode Island. Come on now.
Boom. All right. Let's get on to BYU. So, Matt, the WCC tournament starts this week. BYU on Saturday survived in a thriller against San Diego, which shouldn't have been a thriller because they were ahead by a lot. But we're not going to recap that whole game, blah, blah, blah. You've read about it, all you folks out there. The point I want to ask, Matt, is do we think that these lineup changes that have led to this winning streak here at the end, is this a mirage or is this real? Is this sustainable? You know, we have talked about that neither of us were believers they could win the WCC tournament. I kind of, in our last podcast, started to say, well, maybe. And I said it just like that, by the way. Matt, have you changed your tune based on the results of the last couple of weeks? Do you give the Cougars a better than 1 in 3 chance of winning the entire WCC tournament?
No.
Wow. You are just, but you're consistent. And I like that.
Consistency is good. I'm stubborn.
Especially when you're wrong. It's always good to be consistently wrong.
I haven't seen anything here that shows me that they can be as consistent as I am with my doubt. And so, do I think they could do it? I think they've got the horses to make that run. Yes.
I'm not following. Horses.
I just don't know that I believe they'll put it together.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing is that
you got to win a string of games.
Well, they have won a string of games here, and they beat Gonzaga and St. Mary's in that string.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's that. What I want to say there, though, is I think, quite frankly, the best thing about their chances is the fact that There is no dominant team in this conference. We thought when we started this season, and even a few weeks ago, that Gonzaga was that dominant team. I don't believe that anymore. I think Gonzaga has a less than 50% chance. I would take the field over Gonzaga. I guess that's the way I'd put it. Not necessarily that I'm picking BYU, but I would pick the field over the Zags. You? Or are you still thinking the Zags have a better than 50-50 shot at winning the tournament?
I think they have a better than 50-50 shot.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think they're good enough. I mean, I think there are a couple other teams, us, St. Mary's, even maybe San Francisco, that could put together a run and beat them.
Maybe, but if I were filling out a bracket, they're going to be in the finals. Would you not put them in the finals?
We're about to find out, Matt, because we're going to do that right now. Oh, yeah, that's a segue there. You'd think we had planned this.
And what's crazy is we didn't.
We don't plan anything.
No.
Okay, so let's go to Thursday night's action, okay? The first game of the night is 7th seed Portland and 10th seed Loyola Marymount. Who do you got, Matt?
You're moving a little fast.
Okay.
I don't have my bracket back up here.
Just pick one team.
All right, sorry. What? Give me again.
Portland and Loyola Marymount.
I got Portland.
I have Portland as well. The next game that night is the 8 and 9 seed matchup, Pacific and Santa Clara. And by the way, it's fantastic that we are the second seed. It's so much better to be the second seed. Not as good as last year's tournament format, but it's still pretty awesome. Pacific and Santa Clara. I'll start out
okay.
On this one. I think Santa Clara gives Pacific a great welcome to the West Coast Conference Tournament and sends them packing.
Yeah.
Go home, Pacific.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there.
So I'm going to pick Santa Clara. So starting top to bottom as far as what times the games will start on Saturday, the first game is the 3-seed San Francisco versus the 6-seed San Diego. Who do you got?
San Francisco, baby.
You got the Dons. I have the upset, San Diego.
That's not a bad upset.
No, I don't, you know, we'll see if I'm right. San Diego, they're a Jekyll and Hyde team themselves. They can play really well and either beat or come close to beating us or Gonzaga and then look terrible. So we'll see which one shows up. We both had Portland playing into the game against the Cougars. I think we're both taking the Cougars. Am I safe to make that
assumption? I'm taking the Cougars against the Pilots.
All right. Always go Cougars against Pilots. Gonzaga would be playing we both said Santa Clara, right?
Yep, we did.
Gonzaga wins, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, not much. Now, this 4-5 matchup is kind of interesting. St. Mary's is not nearly as good as we thought they'd be.
Mm-hmm.
Pepperdine is probably better than we thought they'd be. And Pepperdine gets a chance to knock St. Mary's out. Will they do it, Matt?
I've got Pepperdine on the upset.
Ooh, I do not. I have St. Mary's.
Upset alert!
But it's not that big of an upset. 4-5. 4-5.
No, it's not like the San Diego San Francisco upset.
No, I'm bolder than you.
Yeah, but you know, I don't think that pick really shocks anybody. I mean, San Diego. I mean, they're decent.
If you were picking Santa Clara to beat Gonzaga, that'd be a shocker.
Yeah, that'd be stupid.
So I have San Diego. You have San Francisco against BYU in the Monday semifinal. And
I'm taking the Cougars.
Wow, that was a very definitive pick. I am also taking the Cougars. Rise and shout, podcast. All right. So then the other semifinal would be Gonzaga. You have Pepperdine. I have St. Mary's. I will say St. Mary's in the upset.
Are you serious?
Oh, yes, I am.
That's crazy.
Yes, I am. Go ahead. You're going to pick the Zags. Take
it
easy.
Yeah, of course
way.
I'm going to pick the Zags.
All right. So, championship game on Tuesday, a week from when this podcast will be released on ESPN, on the mothership. You have BYU and Gonzaga. I have BYU and St. Mary's. So, Matt, you got the Zags winning the whole thing, right?
Zags win.
Yeah, you said they had a better 50-50 shot, so obviously you pick them. I have BYU winning it!
See, but if St. Mary's beats Gonzaga for us, I think BYU could win the whole thing.
And that's what I think happens. And I think we beat St. Mary's for the third time in a row. Because honestly, I think now that we've got Winder to shut down Pangos, we've kind of figured that out. I don't think they can beat us. I mean, obviously they can beat us, but you know what I'm saying.
I don't think
they will beat us. All right, Matt, we had a tweet bag question that relates to this.
Tweet bag.
That's at Justin D. Sweeney.
Sweeney.
Asked the question. Sweeney! He has not responded about my crack about his leather-bound books.
Hadn't said a word, huh?
No, I don't know why. So what is BYU's...
Must have struck a nerve.
Okay, what is BYU's seed, I assume he means in the NCAA tournament, in the following three scenarios? One, they win the WCC tournament. Matt, if BYU wins the WCC tournament, what seed do you think they should get? Right now, the average bracketology type of thing has them somewhere between a 10 and 11 seed as of today. Matt, if they win the whole enchilada, what do they get?
An 11 seed.
Whoa, come on! Seriously? No, if they win the whole thing, they get like a 9.
I think
they get a 9. Yeah, sure.
All right.
RPI is good. They've got a couple of good wins. This would mean that they either beat St. Mary's or Gonzaga again. So another quality win, you know, would be added to the resume. Actually, it helps them better if they beat Gonzaga in the championship, right? As far as the seeding is concerned, because that'd be two victories against the Zags in a season.
Right.
That'd be pretty sweet. Okay. So let's say your scenario plays out, Matt. He asks, they lose in the championship game to Gonzaga. What seed do you think they are?
In what tournament?
NCAA tournament, Matthew.
So the question assumes that I believe they will make the tournament.
You can say they don't make the tournament. Sure.
They don't make the tournament.
Oh, you're smoking dope. They make the tournament. I think they are an 11th seed in that scenario. And with the upside of a 10 and also the chance that they have to play in that play-in game with it as a 12.
You know, I could probably go with a play-in game if they don't win the tournament.
Yeah. I mean,
I could see that.
It's a realistic scenario. I mean, all of this is a moving target, right? Because it depends on who wins conference tournaments and all that kind of stuff. So, three, they get upset before the championship game. So, in the quarters or the semis. Matt, I know what your answer is already. You think, what seed of the NIT?
I think they get a decent seed in the NIT.
No, but you think it's NIT.
Yeah.
I would agree with you. I think there is an outside shot just based on those early wins, but especially if they lost the quarterfinal game, I think they're out of the NCAA tournament. If they make it to the semis and lose, maybe they slip into one of those play-in games, depending on what else happens. But I don't like their chances unless they get into the championship game, win or lose.
Yeah.
Win or lose. So, Matt, other news that came out today, Mr. Tyler Hawes, you may have heard of him.
Yeah, I hear he's pretty good at basketball.
He is quite good at the game of basketball. He was awarded, Matt, with some hardware today.
A little bit of the hardware.
He was named the player of the year for the West Coast Conference. Pretty awesome, right?
Yeah, it's really awesome.
And BYU had two first-team all-conference performances. Obviously, Hawes, that would be weird if he won the Player of the Year and then didn't get that. And Kyle Collinsworth, also made a sophomore, made the first team. And on the all-freshman team, they had Eric Mika. See, I said that right.
There you go.
And then on the honorable mention selections, Matt Carlino, which good for him. Good for him.
Yeah,
I thought
he's also he would also be honorable mention all BYU.
Yes, he would be that as well. Wow, that was kind of hurtful.
That one stung a little bit. That was out of line. Listen, that was out of line. I'm feeling a little too snarky.
Come on, way too snarky.
That was uncalled.
He really did. I mean, he has been consistent in the second half of the year. I feel that way. I mean. he has found a place on this team where he can contribute consistently, coming off the bench. I think it's a good role for him. I think it really works.
No, that's good.
Now, Winder, Matt, of course, wasn't going to make any of these lists. Well, actually, let's do this a different way. Let's go player by player and 1 to 10, the impact you think they will have in whatever the postseason run is, whether that's WCC plus NCAA or WCC plus NIT. Okay?
Okay.
So let's start with Mr. Tyler Hawes, scale of 1 to 10, his impact on our postseason success.
10.
10. Yeah, that's easy.
That one's not hard.
So, Mr. Collinsworth, his impact on our postseason success.
9.
Yeah, I'd say 9 or 10, right? I mean, if he plays really poorly, I think our chances of being successful in any postseason play is pretty low, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he'll have a high impact. So let's go to Mr. Carlino. What kind of impact do you think he'll have?
8.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Mostly because I think when he plays well, it's really good.
Yes.
And it's good for the team. When he doesn't play well, it requires some adjustment.
Yes. Yes.
So the level of impact, the strength of his impact, I'd say is pretty strong.
And I'd say that our chances to upset somebody in any of these scenarios is somewhat dependent on him having a great game. Because when he has his great games, it takes a lot of pressure off of Collinsworth and Hawes.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, and when he gets hot, I mean, he can just hit some crazy shots when he's hot. We all know that. He can do that. So let's talk about Nate Austin, Matt.
Oh.
I'm going to give him an 8.
Yeah.
I you know, here's the thing with Austin. He gets a lot of rebounds. We all know that. But he kind of plays an important role that's getting the charges and, you know, clogging up the middle. He's not a great defender from a classic, you know, guard the big man kind of way. But he's a good help defender. I think he's the most underrated player on the team. I think if you talk to fans about when this team has played well, they're going to talk about Hawes. They're going to talk about Collinsworth, Carlino, now Winder. Maybe even Halford back when he was playing well. No one's going to talk about Austin, but I think they should be. Don't you?
Yeah, I mean, but they talk about these other people because they make a really solid contribution.
Yes.
And it's a contribution that is much more visible than what Austin is doing.
Oh, sure. Sure.
And so, I mean, you can't really fault anybody for that. But, you know, he does play an important role. They don't really have anybody else to fill.
Yes, agreed.
And it frees some other people up to do other things. You know, it keeps people out of foul trouble and some of those types of things.
All right, Frank Bartley the IV, your favorite guy. Like a 0, 1?
1.
1. Skylar Halford, tough one. He's not been playing much.
Yeah, I'm in the 7-ish range, maybe.
See, I'm more in like the 3 to 4. I don't think.
It depends what kind of minutes he gets.
He hasn't played a whole lot lately, and we've been winning. So I'm not too caught up. Eric Mika.
10.
You know, I'm with you. He hasn't played as much lately, coming off the bench, as many minutes. But I don't think we go very far. I'll give him a 9. I don't think we go very far in postseason play if he's not playing well. Josh Sharp, 10. I'm totally kidding. 0. 1.
Yeah, nothing.
Maybe 2. Anson Winder.
You know what? I'm going to go ahead and throw a 9 up.
I think it's got to be an 8 or 9, doesn't it? I mean, the success of this last couple weeks is very closely tied to his ability to give great minutes on the perimeter.
Yeah.
Good defense.
And I think...
Go ahead.
I think that, you know, what we've seen with this last stretch of games is that he's making a real impact. And so if they're going to continue that momentum into the postseason, they're going to need that type of participation out of him.
Yeah, yeah. And lastly, but not leastly, Luke Worthington, who is also coming back, not to the level of Winder, but has certainly had a much bigger impact the last couple of weeks than he had for many weeks before that. What is your rating on him, player impact rating?
2.
I'm going more like a 4, 3 or 4. I think he makes an impact. But, I mean, he doesn't play a ton of minutes. But when, you know, one of the big guys gets in foul trouble, it's good to have another big guy that can get in there and knock people around a little bit.
So, yeah.
So there you have it. So, Matt, one question. Jerem Jordan and I talked about this a little bit on the podcast last week, which you should go check that one out because it was super awesome. Dave Rose, past midway of the conference play, changes his lineup in a drastic fashion. Takes Mika and puts him on the bench, coming off the bench. Carlino had already been put in a role coming off the bench and puts in Anson Winder and then Josh Sharp and Luke Worthington, depending on the day, as the starters in the front court. Matt, do you think this was a admittance of a mistake that he had been playing the wrong people, or is this just the natural evolution of a coach, a human being trying to figure out what's going on with his team and the players on it?
I think it's the latter. I think this is a coach trying to figure out what the right balance is. And it took a long time to get there. It took longer than anybody wanted it to, but he found it. There were several iterations of tweaking it to get there. I don't know that this is, you know, necessarily admitting that there was a mistake, but he certainly seems to have figured something out at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's clicking now. I mean, I think they're capable of the run, though you're not giving them, you didn't pick them to win the tournament. I think it's safe to say you feel better about this team than you did 2 weeks ago, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't think it's impossible for them to win the tournament. I'm just not picking it as likely. I think they have it in them to do it. I think they can beat any team in this field, on any given day. So we've seen some progress.
Yes, we certainly have seen some progress. We have seen that. So, Matt, staying on basketball here, Jimmer is free.
Yeah.
Jimmer is free. So Matt, Jimmer is now with the Bulls.
He's in a better place now.
He's in a better place. There's no doubt of that. So he's in a better place. Not one of the teams either of us picked in our little draft last week, of course. That was inevitable. So he plays... on Sunday, he goes in and he plays a total of 3 minutes.
Yep.
So, that was kind of similar to what he got with the Kings. Not a lot. And then tonight...
I think they were taking it easy on him because it was the Sabbath.
I may have to edit that one out. then Jimmer played tonight. We're recording on Monday night. Played 3 minutes again. Again, scored 2 points. Is this a matter of, do we think he won't actually... right now they're playing Heinrich and Butler as the starting guards with DJ Augustine playing that third perimeter guard role. And I look at this and I know everyone's like, oh, it's a great fit. And I look at that and you know what I see? A bunch of perimeter players. And I wonder... if it will end up being, it's the first two games. He's learning the system. But I also know their coach, and their coach is a defensive guy. And that, we know, is not Jimmer's strongest point. So, Matt, do you see this as a good fit, and you're hopeful he'll get meaningful minutes for a playoff-bound team? Or do you think, in retrospect, Jimmer will be kicking himself because he signed with a team that's not really going to let him exhibit his full talents in the last... a few months of the NBA season?
I think their plan is for him to see some more action, get some more minutes with a playoff bound team. It's no secret when you sign Jimmer Fredette that he's not a defensive superstar.
Correct.
It's not what you bring him in to do.
That is
not. Bring him in to hit the long range shot, something that Chicago Bulls have not been doing very well. You know, and Jimmer is what, around 50% outside the arc right now?
Yeah, something crazy. Very, very good year.
So that's what they brought him in for. I think you give him a little bit of time to learn the system. And like you said, he's got a, there's a, the defense is kind of the, that coaching staff's mantra, right? So
sure.
They'll make him work on that a little bit. They'll put him, they'll bring him to a place where he's serviceable when, and so they can get him out there to hit those long shots when they need him to. So I think that this is a situation where he's going to have a chance to exhibit those skills and maybe, you know, learn some things and demonstrate that he can be taught to play defense.
Yeah, I just don't know yet, quite frankly, if this was a good decision or not. It really depends on what, how they use him. As a team, they have shot only 34% from behind the three-point line. You pointed out they have not been a good three-point shooting team. Of their regulars, of anybody that's shooting any three-pointers, the best one they have is Augustine, who's hitting a respectable 42%, and Dunleavy's hitting at 38%. They could definitely use the boost, though, on the perimeter. And, of course, Derrick Rose isn't there, injured. So, you know, there's certainly potential to earn some minutes. If he ends up playing meaningful minutes in the playoffs, I think he's one of those guys that could have one of those sneaky playoff games where he scores nearly 30 points because he hit like 7 threes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that can happen. And if that happens, he will earn himself a chance with this team or another team to play next year and hopefully in an expanded role. But I do worry that, you know, it's good for him to be on a playoff team and not be on another poor team. But on the other hand, the flip side of that is he may not see as many minutes as he would have, say, as we talked about with the Knicks last podcast.
Yeah.
But he does get to play with Joakim Noah. I mean.
Yeah, who's the second best basketball player in his family next to his brother running Noah.
I don't even know what this joke means.
What are
you talking about?
Come on.
These jokes are terrible. These jokes are terrible. You should be fired from this podcast for these jokes.
You're terrible.
Also true. Also true. And I may fire myself from the podcast as well. I haven't ruled that out, quite frankly. So Matt, we did not talk any BYU football this week, and we're not really going to. I know spring practice starts. We don't have anything to say. It just started, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're practicing.
They're practicing, and we'll talk about it next week, and we'll have plenty to say on the subject next week, as well as, of course, we'll know how BYU did at least in one game of the tournament, of the WCC tournament. So, anyway, anything else you'd like to add before we depart?
No, I'm just, you know, let's see how this plays out.
Yes.
In the tournament. It will be very interesting.
Very excited, though. This should be fun. It should be fun. And it's great that these, like, they're early round games on BYU TV, right? So it's not lost. We can watch.
Yeah.
So that is excellent.
I will say one other thing that is cool is that BYU got Player of the Year in both men and women's basketball.
I didn't even see that on the women's
side. That's pretty sweet. Jennifer Hampson.
Yeah, yeah.
Won the Player of the Year. I mean, that's pretty awesome.
That is pretty awesome. Very, very good call out, sir. Very well done. Very well done. And best of luck to them as well in the tournament.
I think they got a 2 seed in the tournament.
Yeah, they should do well. I think I don't follow them particularly closely, but I have seen part of a couple of games this year, so that's more than usual, maybe. Yeah, 2 seed, yes, yeah. 2 seed Gonzaga. It's I feel like I'm looking at the same bracket.
It's like all the same. Yeah, it's the same teams are good.
You know, St. Mary's is the 4 seed. It's different. It is different, but you know. It's us 1, BYU, I mean, us 2, Gonzaga 1, St. Mary's 4. Pacific, though, in bizarro land, is actually a 3 seed. So there you go.
I'll tell you what is interesting about this Jennifer Hampson is she's a 2-sport star.
She's a 2-sport star. Her other sport being?
Volleyball.
Yes, yes.
She has said that if the WNBA comes calling, she's still going to play her senior year of volleyball first.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh, I had not heard that. That's pretty cool.
She loves the Cougs. I think her mom was a volleyball player at BYU.
Oh,
I think I saw a special on that.
Oh, well, you know.
I'm full of all sorts of weird information
she
today.
She is quite tall. I mean, if she was put on the men's team, she would be like the fifth or sixth tallest guy on the team.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe if she's physical enough, maybe she could have filled in for Bronson Kafusi.
Well, you know. Hey, I will say one thing. Kafusi as a linebacker, Matt. That's what they're doing. That's what they're saying they're going to do. He's going to replace Van Ooy. What do you think about that?
That's crazy.
I think it's crazy genius. The guy's got mad physical skills. He'll have to probably slender out a little bit, but I think he's capable. No?
Yeah, but when you start saying he's going to replace Van Ooy, I don't mean
he's going to be as good as
Van Ooy was a freak of nature.
Yeah, I didn't say that. I just mean that they may have found someone that can come in and match at least some of what Van Ooy brought to the table athletically.
Well, another thing Kafusi you could probably do is you can play him down at the line of scrimmage. You can get him down in a 3-point stance, or you can put him up on his feet. You know, and move him onto the ends or rush him up the middle or something. There's probably some real versatility there for them to play with.
Yes, and good segue, Matt. Up after our blabbing at each other, I talked with Tom Melton, who's an NFL draft guru, and he says a little bit on the podcast, but talked more. He is a big fan of Bronson Kafusi's. He thinks he has an NFL future. He thinks he has that kind of upside.
That'd be pretty awesome.
That would be pretty awesome. Well,
keep pumping them out.
Well, keep checking out LoyalCougars.com for our coverage of the WCC tournament. Hopefully all good news this weekend at minimum. And then, of course, check with us back next week as we talk about the tournament and also talk about spring football. This is the Rise and Shout podcast. Catch us on iTunes. And, of course, you will catch us next time.
Go Cougars!
Welcoming to the Rise and Shout podcast, Tom Melton, who is a NFL scout. He works at DraftFalcons.com and other stuff going on, but been doing scouting for a couple years. Tom, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Glad to be on.
And notice it says you're a member of the Football Writers Association of America on your bio on Twitter.
Yes, sir.
So you're a card-carrying member. So does that mean you can go into press boxes and stuff?
Nice. So, I've been going to the Senior Bowl and the East-West Shrine Game for the last 4 years, so it's been fun to get credentialed for that and get to go up in the press box. And, you know, it's kind of a cool experience, you know.
Yeah, I was a sports writer for a while. It is kind of a cool deal. Though I don't know if they have they used to have really good spreads at those things. I don't know if the food is as good anymore. Journalistic integrity. Yeah. You were too busy. Too busy actually watching the games. So we had John, you're very active on Twitter and during the you watched tape of the BYU-Houston game. I feel like it was like a week later or 4 or 5 days after the game, and you tweeted some things about Van Ooy and Cody Hoffman that caught my eye. So that's what we're primarily going to chat with you about today, Tom. I wanted to get your impression of Kyle Van Ooy. In BYU lore, he is one of the best linebackers we've ever had. He's had some plays like against San Diego State a year ago in the bowl game, where he's had games where he's won the game almost by himself, which is pretty rare for a linebacker in the college level. More hear about that on position players on offense. So tell me your impressions of Cody Hoffman, what you see as someone that watches tape and does scouting, and what you might expect when we might expect to hear his name when the NFL draft rolls around here. Not too far in the future.
Well, I've been a fan of Kyle Van Ooy for years. You know, I remember when I was running for NFL draft sponsors a couple years ago, and I was not doing the BYU preview, but my friend Justin was, and he sent me the preview just to say, hey, is this looking okay? And it didn't have Kyle Van Ooy in it. And this is leading into senior year. I was like, no, you got to go back and watch Van Ooy. You got to put him in there. He's like, oh, I don't know much about Van Ooy. I was like, look up his stats. And he was like, wow, I'm dumb. I should have been putting him in here. And then he went back last year. He was like, holy crap, I can't believe I missed this guy. I was like, I know, he pops off. he pops off the tape and you watch him. So I've been a Fan Noy fan for a couple of years, obviously, and you know, he's not like an elite athlete. I think he ran a 4.71 at the combine, which is fine for 243 pounds. You know, he's just, to me, he's just such a versatile guy. He's so well-rounded. He's not necessarily elite in any area as far as the NFL goes. It's hard to be elite and when you come out of college and go to the NFL, so I don't want that to come off as an insult. I've had like a late first, early second round grade on him for a while because, you know, I don't think he's going to be like a stud pass rusher. I don't think he's going to be like a perfect coverage guy. But I do think he can play 4-3 outside linebacker. I think he could play inside in a 3-4. I think he could play outside in a 3-4. And I think even if you wanted to, you could let him rush from a 4-3 defensive end spot if he, you know, got a little stronger perhaps. So I think he can do a lot of different things for you, and I think that is his strength. He's kind of a Swiss Army knife. I know BYU moved him around a lot. So letting him move around and kind of play to all his versatile skills is what's best for him, in my opinion. You know, I'm not sure exactly what defensive scheme is best for him because I think he could do so many different things. So, you know, I don't want him only rushing the passer. I want to drop him into coverage some. I want to let him play the run too. So I think that, you know, teams are going to look at him and be like, he's pretty polished. How much, quote-unquote, upside does he have? Because NFL teams are obsessed with upside and unfulfilled potential instead of players who are just good at football sometimes. So Van Noy may not appeal to everyone, but for NFL teams that go to the playoffs a lot, Van Noy is going to be really popular. And I saw people talking about how Van Noy was like a typical Patriots player, a typical, you know, playoff team player. And I think that what you mentioned about how he's, you know, won games by himself at the end of the games matters. You know, he may not, you know, have, you know, 20 sacks in a year, 15 sacks in a year, but he has a knack for making big plays when it counts. And I think that that's always been really important to me when I'm evaluating people, because that's something that you just have or you don't. And I think Van Noy has it. So, you know, I think playoff teams are going to look at him and say, you know, he may not be like a crazy stat guy, but I think he's going to be a great part of our team defense. I think team defense matters more to NFL teams more than, you know, just stats or impressive measurables, at least for the teams that win. So
sure.
I think Van Noy could come off late in the first round, but he might slip into the second round just because this class is so stacked and so deep. So if he does, I would gladly take him in Atlanta, but we'll see what happens.
Well, and as a Patriots fan, I'd be more than happy if he ended up in a Patriots uniform. Now, one of the things that got discussed a lot on message boards and stuff by BYU fans was towards the end of the season, you mentioned they moved him around. We had some problems in the secondary covering good wide receivers, and they ended up splitting Van Noy out as a cornerback at the end of the year in a couple of games, not the whole time, but to cover some better wide receivers, and he actually did a pretty good job. In the case of NFL teams, or as you watch tape, is that helpful? Because, wow, it shows his versatility, and obviously it was good for the team that he was able to do that. Or is that more confusion for a scout because, well, I don't know what to make of this guy because now they're splitting him out and I don't get as many snaps to evaluate him as a linebacker, which is the position he's likely to play in the NFL?
I think it's absolutely something that helps because, honestly, if you're worried about not having enough snaps of Kyle Van Noy as a linebacker, then I really don't know what to tell you because he's been playing for the last 3 years at a high level. So if you're, you know, if you're worried about that, then I don't know what to tell you. But, you know, I know that Deion Jordan really, you know, opened some eyes last year when he was out covering tight ends and slot receivers and stuff. So I know that it can help. And so I think that Van Noy showing that he can do that, you know, totally helps because in the NFL, it is all about matchup problems. And with all these big athletic tight ends like Jimmy Graham or Tony Gonzalez or Antonio Gates, anybody, you could go on the list, having a guy that could go out in the slot or go out on the outside and match up with a guy that's that athletic. And I think Kyle Van Noy can do that. You know, he's not going to run with a 4-4 flat wide receiver down the field necessarily, but, you know, he's not a bad athlete himself, and he's obviously not bad in space. So putting him out on a tight end like that, I think that he can hang with them relatively well. And I think that NFL teams are going to acknowledge that because we all know how big of a matchup problem some of these guys are, and having someone who can, you know, line up one-on-one in coverage and match up size-wise but also athletically is pretty hard to find, and I think Kyle Van Noy could do a good job of that.
Yeah, yeah. So moving on to Cody Hoffman, Tom. He last year going into the season, a lot of draft nicks had him as a second or third round pick. Now I'm seeing much later than that. I've even seen some put him in the sixth, seventh round, which of course puts you in that potentially undrafted free agent range. As a guy that watched him for his entire career, I would, you know, just gut feel would put him much more without, you know, watching tape on other guys, third, fourth round kind of receiver. Where do you sit on him? He's obviously not overwhelming with his speed. He's got good size, all those things that you might tick off. But what does the game tape tell you, and where do you see Cody Hoffman landing on those days of the draft?
Well, the thing with Hoffman, in my opinion, is it's kind of the upside thing that I talked about with Van Noy. You know, he doesn't have elite speed, straight line speed. You know, I think he only had a 27.5-inch vertical, which isn't great for a receiver, but he's already 6'4 with well over 33-inch arms. So, you know, you also can't worry too much about that. It's not like he doesn't have the catch radius, but teams want upside. And seeing a guy like Hoffman, who's been playing for 4 years, you know, it's like, how much better is he going to get than what we've already got? And so I think that, you know, he's the kind of guy, unfortunately, that slides onto day three, and then you draft him, and then you wonder, oh, wow, why did he fall so far? Because it's like he's good at football or something. He's been playing for 4 years. I don't understand. It's just weird how that happens sometimes. And I think that, you know, Hoffman has shown what he can do. I mean, he's got good hands. He doesn't run great routes. I think he runs pretty good routes. I think he could work on that a little bit. But I had him pegged as like a 4.55 to 4.6 guy, and he ran a 4.65 on the power official, and his times were 4.54 and 4.53 official. I don't like the NFL Combine and their times or whatever, because there's absolutely no way I believe that DeAnthony Thomas ran a 4.5 flat.
Right.
Like, there's absolutely 0% chance. And people on Twitter are making fun of me, being like, you realize you're arguing with lasers, right? I'm like, I don't care. There's zero chance that DeAnthony Thomas could backpedal at 4.5 as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, I think I trust my eyes when I see that Hoffman can, you know, I have him pegged in the 4.55, 4.6 range on the field. And I think that's what matters. And at 6'3", 225, you know, that's not a bad time at all. And, you know, he's got long strides, obviously. So he's got what I refer to as like sneaky speed, where corners will be like, okay, well, I can run with this guy. And then all of a sudden he takes three or four strides and he's 2 yards ahead of you. And you're like, how the heck did that happen? And I think that, you know, that can't be overstated. And, you know, he has the long career of production, and he has been playing with some terrible quarterbacks until this year. So, you know, his freshman year, it looked like he was going to be a stud because of how, you know, he and Jay Keats were playing well together, and they had seemed like great chemistry. And then that obviously fizzled out when Heaps didn't come back. So I think that the thing with Hoffman is he might go day three. And I mean, this class is so loaded that it's really hard to figure out where he's going to go from round 4 to 7. I would be surprised if he went undrafted personally. I mean, I've been a fan of him for years, so I mean, I might be a little biased there, but regardless of when he goes, I think that once he gets into camp, I think he'll be able to show that he can play and that he can stick. So I'm not that worried about him making a roster. So I don't know when he will. I can't figure out when he'll go yet, and I'll probably have a, you know, a fourth round grade on him myself, just because it's so hard to put him on that day two level when there's so many like just freakishly talented receivers this year. Like, you know, I've given out like 6 or 7 top 50 grades so far at wide receiver, and it's just like a super deep class. I hate to bump Hoffman down as a result of that, but that's just kind of how it goes. And I still do really like him, and I think that he's got a place on the roster. It just might not be as a, it's definitely not going to be as a number one guy, but it's good that he's shown that he can be that guy. You know what I mean? So
sure.
I think that his upside is kind of a number two or number three type. And I think that he's shown more than enough to be able to do that. But I think he'll have to work his way up for that because NFL teams are going to draft the guys who run 4.4 flats over him and probably drop the pass half the time. And right. Just because they're like all upside. So
yeah.
Hoffman just doing his job and maybe not testing as well isn't going to impress them as much as some guys who have untapped potential that can't catch the ball.
Yeah, no, no, absolutely, and we all know sometimes they fall in love with receivers that end up flaming out pretty quickly when mm-hmm. you know catching the ball and running good routes is kind of important to play yep. a wide receiver too. Yeah. Non BYU related, everyone likes to talk quarterbacks, Tom. So yep. I'm going to ask you a couple quarterback related questions. I can tell you that as a BYU fan who's playing Central Florida this year, after watching a couple of their games, I was really glad that Blake Bortles declared for the NFL draft because I did not want to face him, especially in a defense where we were losing some of our best players. So tell me, Blake Bortles, you know, he didn't run a great 40-yard dash time, a little under, I think it was 4.93 or something like that. But he's a big dude. I look at him in the quarterback class and call me crazy. He's kind of the one I saw all of them play at some point this year. And I guess Johnny Manziel, maybe Johnny Football, I'm not as big of a fan because I think he's a bit of a head case. And I'd worry about if winning the Heisman gave him problems, what happens when you hand him a lot of money and all those other things. But anyway, Blake Bortles, where does he fit for you? Do you think he's an actual NFL starting quarterback, guy that can play on one of those playoff teams? Or do you think at this point maybe we just don't know enough because of who he played for and who he played against?
I think he's a good quarterback, and, you know, I'm kind of one of those guys that, you know, he's a late first round, early second round type to me.
Sure.
And I know a number of other people have grades similar to that, and I think he has just about as much upside as, you know, anyone in this class, which is, I think, why he's catapulting up board so much, because as far as I know, he did not actually have a specific quarterback coach at Central Florida. And I think that when NFL teams hear that, they're like, he was this good without a quarterback coach. Imagine what we could do with our quarterback coach.
You know, right,
that's
right.
That's how they think. So looking at, you know, Teddy Bridgewater, who is my personal number one quarterback, like, oh, well, he is, you know, he's already good. Like, what if Bortles could be better than him? And, you know, it's just like, wouldn't you just want the quarterback who's already good? But, you know, I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me sometimes. But, I mean, Bortles has a lot of upside. And I think my favorite thing about him might be, in addition to his size, arm strength, pretty good accuracy, that stuff, he is so calm in the pocket. I mean, yeah. He just never seems to get rattled. He has a very good feel in the pocket. And, you know, the more and more that I do this, the more I realize that it's almost impossible to be a good or great starting quarterback without that feel in the pocket. And that's kind of what makes me a little nervous about Derek Carr, just because doesn't have a great feel for the rush. He doesn't have a great feel of when he's got to step up. He has a decent feel, but not a great feel. And I think Bortles really has that. I think Bridgewater has that. Manziel at times scrambles too quickly, but I think that has something to do with the offense that he played in, probably just encouraging him to make a read or two and then take off and, you know, scramble and make a broken play happen. I mean, Manziel has as good a feel for the rush and closing defenders as anyone I've ever watched, so I'm not worried about him in the pocket from that aspect. So I think that, sorry to go on the tangent, but I think Bortles is one of those guys that he needs to sit for a little while. And I feel like I say this about every quarterback every year, and they never let them sit.
No, they don't. Not anymore.
Yeah, exactly. It drives me absolutely insane because the quarterback development process has gone to complete garbage. But you see a guy who apparently didn't even have a quarterback coach his entire career at UCF, and he still did a dang good job and progressed well from his freshman year to now. You know, imagine what you can do if you can clean up some of his mechanics and, you know, just kind of improve him and coach him up a little bit. And I think that might be one of the reasons he struggles to recover sometimes, because he didn't have anyone breaking everything down with him right afterwards. So that's just my personal opinion. I haven't done too much digging on him as far as football IQ and stuff like that. But there are times when he, you know, misreads coverages and makes the wrong read, in my opinion. So I think that, you know, taking some time to sit, maybe learning for, if he goes to the Texans, learning from Matt Schaub or whoever else they have on the roster when he goes there, and not playing right away, would be beneficial to him, because then I think that you start to, you know, once the game slows down for him a little bit from, you know, reading coverages and making the right read, then I think his ability to extend plays, you know, his arm strength and his feel in the pocket will start to become even greater assets.
So get you out on one last quarterback question. So Johnny Football, 10 years from now, NFL flameout who's appearing at a lot of Texas A&M sideline trying to reclaim the glory, or long NFL career?
I would lean towards long NFL career. Okay. And I'll tell you why. But I think that the thing with Johnny Manziel, I mean, everyone knows he can scramble. Everyone knows he's fun to watch. Everyone knows he's, you know, makes a bunch of crazy plays. I think the thing that's special to me about him more than anything else is, you know, when his teammates go on the field with him, I think that they believe they can win any game that they play. And I think that that is so rare in a quarterback. But, I mean, watching him as a freshman just go into Alabama and just tear them apart, I mean, it was just unbelievable what he was able to do. And then everyone was like, oh, well, Saban's going to figure him out over the offseason. They play him so early, he's going to shut Manziel down. And he came back and played even better without Ryan Slope, a worse group of wide receivers, even though Mike Evans clearly improved. I mean, it was just absolutely, and if they had any defense at all, Texas A&M wins that game.
Yeah.
Their defense was just terrible. And, I mean, it's just amazing to me. And so I think that the ability to, I think he, his teammates are drawn to him. I think he makes everyone around him better. I think a lot of people kind of watch him play and they're like, oh, well, Mike Evans is the only reason he's good. But, you know, I like Travis Labhart, but other than that, his wide receivers are not very good. And they dropped a lot of passes. And I think Manziel made them look a lot better by giving him the opportunity to just kind of scramble themselves open. Because other than Mike Evans, who can make catches when he is covered, they don't have a lot of guys that can win and create separation. And people knock on him a lot for, you know, why does he hold on to the ball so long? Sometimes it's just because his receivers aren't open. And, you know, we don't have the opportunity always to see the all-22 angle. But when you do see the all-22 angle, more often than not, his receivers aren't just, you know, running great routes and getting open. And I think that, you know, people forget that sometimes quarterbacks who scramble aren't just scrambling around because they feel like it. Sometimes there's literally nothing there, and Manziel knows that if he leaves the pocket and gets out of there, his guys can come open and come free. And I think that he showed that that works pretty well when he when he's on the college level. It won't always work on the NFL level, especially since he doesn't have the elite speed straight line to get away from guys like Clowney, who scares me, frankly, running a 4.53 official.
If Clowney's behind him or one of those other elite elite running defensive linemen or linebackers, they will catch him where maybe sometimes they did not in college.
But at the same time, I mean, he's got such a great feel for, you know, when the pressure's coming, how to get away, et cetera. I'm not that worried about it. People are worried about him getting hurt all the time because if he takes, I think that he'll be fine. I mean, 6 feet, 210 pounds or so, you know, that's not tiny in my book. It's not huge. But, I mean, you know, I'm not worried about him getting hurt all the time like some people are. I mean, maybe I'll be proven wrong in that aspect, but I'm not worried about it. But I think that the ability to inspire your teammates, I mean, if you watch the Duke game, the bowl game, I mean, you could see that he was leading his team and trying to pump his team up and, you know, get them to step up and win the game with him, and they totally did. And it was just really fun to watch that because, you know, people have been saying all year, oh, his teammates don't want to play for him, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't know what you guys are watching, but I see people who would go out and die for Johnny Manziel on the field. And, you know, I think that's special, and it's hard to find that in a quarterback. So those intangible qualities and the amazing feel he has for the game, if he'll work at it, and it really seems like he'll work at it. I mean, I haven't done an interview with him, but it really seems like he wants to work and put in the time and not just party all the time. So I'm willing to roll the dice on a guy with that kind of special skill set.
Absolutely. Well, Tom, thanks for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate it. Your insights on Vannoy and Hoffman, and we look forward, of course. Where can we find you on Twitter? It's at T Melton Scouting. Where else can we find your stuff?
Well, I'm also writing for NFL or for Draft Falcons, so you can search that on Twitter and on the internet, www.draftfalcons.com. And then I'm working on a NFL draft guide for the first time this year with at Sports Narrative, but it's going to be called Draft Narratives Scouting Guide. So we'll have that up and available in early April, I believe. So I got a lot of work to do before the end of March. But
yes, you do.
Yes, you have no idea. But one quick thing that I want to say before I go.
Absolutely.
I watched some Ethan Manumaliuna.
Oh, yeah, I was going to ask you about him, so fire away.
Yeah, well, I was ready. I prepped for it, so I wanted to make sure I got my 2 cents in. But I was actually really impressed. And, you know, he's not a crazy athlete, but, as you know, I think he ran a 5.16 40. But I was really impressed. And, you know, they moved him around all over the place. They had him at one tech. They had him heads up on the center. They had him defensive end. They had him a little at three tech. So I think he can move him all over the place. And, I mean, it wasn't against always, like, the best competition, like Middle Tennessee State or anything like that. But he really showed the ability to, you know, stack and shed the line scrimmage. He can control the offensive lineman when he's one-on-one. He stood up to double teams pretty well a couple times. But the most impressive thing about him, besides obviously his motor and his tackling ability and his leadership, is, you know, how well he sees the field and how high his football IQ is, because it's pretty rare for a defensive lineman to have such good vision into the backfield that, you know, there's so many times when he's just stacked up on a center or a guard and just waiting for the running back to make his cut, sheds the block and tosses the guy to the other side and then wraps up the guy in the hole. I mean, it's really fun to watch, because the shedding blocks is kind of a lost art sometimes. And it seems like he really uses his hands well and has a good feel for, you know, how to shed blocks at the point, which is super fun to watch. He's got some quickness off the ball too, so he can surprise you a little bit from that. So I don't think he's going to go super high. I mean, he's an older rookie. Is he 24 or 25 right now?
I think he's 25. He's okay. Or maybe even 26, because he had went on a mission and had a medical red shirt. So
didn't he do something to his patella last year or something?
Yeah, he's been hurt pretty much his whole football career. This was his healthiest season by far. And what you're saying, my brother and I have been talking about for years about him. And, you know, defensive linemen are harder to evaluate as a casual fan, because a lot of times what they do is open up the great play for the linebacker, right? Mm-hmm. So the linebacker makes the tackle in the backfield and you say, oh, well, it was the linebacker, but it was because Manumaliuna shed the block and then the running back picked him up and then the linebacker made the play. Which, by the way, when the running back picks him up, I always find that pretty funny to watch, because it's a little bit of a weight mismatch.
Yeah, exactly.
There. But I'm with you. I think Manumaliuna could, if he can stay healthy, have a good career as a, you know, not a star, but a solid NFL defensive lineman. And like you said, that, you know, Bronco Mendenhall will move his best guys on defense all over the place. And, certainly Manumaliuna got to play all this season and seasons before wherever they thought it would work and match up well.
Exactly. Exactly. And I really like that. And I think that, you know, maybe he's not going to be a high pick. He might not need to get drafted because of how old he is and maybe his injury history. But I think that if he gets into a camp, I think he'll impress people and find a way to stick on a roster. And so hopefully he stays healthy, like you said, and then I think he can make a team for sure.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Tom. Appreciate you throwing in on Manumaliuna as well. That's
Hey, man, if I did the prep work on it, I wanted to at least talk about it a little bit.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for coming on. We'll definitely definitely have you on again to talk NFL prospects and draft, especially about the Cougars. But thanks for your time this morning, and we'll encourage everyone to follow you on Twitter.
Sounds good. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.